New Zealand has the worst teen suicide rate in the developed world. The number of young people aged between 15 and 19 who are killing themselves has remained largely unchanged for about two decades. Somebody who heard the stories and heard the utter devastation of the families who were left behind is former Chief Coroner Neil McLean, who joins me now. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Was that one of the toughest parts of your job, hearing the stories and feeling as though there was nothing that you could do?
To some extent, yes, particularly with the young suicides.
Yeah.
And of course, the younger the person, the even harder it got for me, or for any coroner, for that matter, dealing with it.
Did you get a sense when you heard the backstory to you know, the reason why they took their lives, that they meant to do it, that this was an end that they sought, or just respite?
There's no simple answer to that. The motivation, the drivers are various, particularly with young men.
Mm.
Sheer impulsivity, highly risk-taking behaviour, with a borderline between just crazy, silly, careless behaviour and dangerous behaviour. With young women, particularly young Maori women, it was often a sad, complicated mix, lack of self-esteem, abuse, alcohol, drugs, dropping out of the educational system, getting in trouble with the law, the whole mix. So there's no kind of one factor.
Which makes it even tougher to combat, to find a way to reach out to these young people and give them a sense that there is a future for them.
Absolutely, because you're dealing with the end point of a life which in retrospect was pretty hopeless. You know, there was no hope. The person didn't feel that they had someone they could confide in. They bottled things up and eventually came to an irrational conclusion. I'm such a burden, the best thing I can do is end it, to spare others, to spare myself. I think often, with particularly young people, a lack of awareness of the finality of it all.
Mm. I did wonder about that, whether they just wanted to stop for the second or the moment as opposed to forever.
Yes, well, particularly, you know, when you get the sort of cases where a very young person, just in reaction to a, you know, being ticked off by their parent about something, just impulsively rushes out and kills themselves. It's hard to imagine that really how rationally, you know, you can't rationalise that.
No. I suppose it's also, I do remember when I was working in Talk Back at Nights, there was a spate, it seemed, of teen suicides on the Kapiti Coast a number of years back. Does it feed upon itself, all this, you know, there was a fad, if you will, in the early 20s in the United States when young women would come to Hollywood to make their fortunes. They didn't, so they would stage these elaborate scenes where they would take their own lives, and at least for once people would recognise them, would look at them. It became quite a drama and spread quite quickly. Is there a danger of that happening in New Zealand?
There is, and in New Zealand we had, I think, the last century, and John Weaver talks about this in his book, a culture of a gothic culture,
right,
where young men dressed up in black and indulged in sort of weird behaviour, and there were some suicides in that. But yes, sometimes, and of course the Herald program picks up on this, there is, you know, what the suicidologists call a cluster. Coroners often will be looking at that to see is there some connection, and sometimes there is, particularly in a close-knit small rural community, everybody knows everybody else. So yeah, there is sometimes a pattern of this.
You talked about it being an irrational response, but if you have had a miserable time from birth, from before birth, really, if you've grown up in a culture of abuse, is it irrational to think I've had enough?
Well, it's probably a bit cruel to say that. I mean, objectively irrational.
Right.
But obviously, you know, what you're getting at, if you put yourself in that person's shoes and say, would I be able to stand up to that if all that was happening to me? Mm. And of course, that's where the real difficulty is. An outsider, particularly an adult, trying to understand what appears to be utterly irrational, just not a solution at all. And that feeling that, you know, we all go through tough times. Everybody has problems and down periods, but by and large, we know that you'll come out the other side, particularly if you've got someone you can talk to about it, open up about it, discuss it.
So where would you start? I mean, if you were given an unlimited, if you were a benevolent dictator, where would you start?
Well, you know, I think the approach of people like Mike King and some of the others who work in that area is a good starting point to get respected people who've been there, who've had the experience and can actually talk to young people and say, I know what it's like because I've been there, but listen, there is hope and I'm here and we can talk you through it. It requires, you know, like a lot of things, a sort of a mentor, but it needs to be a mentor who's not a kind of paternalistic, come on, stiff upper lip, buck up, you'll get through this sort of thing. It has to be someone like a Mike King who has an understanding of it and can relate to kids. And, you know, I've worked with Mike and I've seen him talking with kids, and he's talking with them, not at them. So that's the starting point, right down at base level.
And yet, there you've got Mike King, who's walked away from a government committee on the very issue of mental health because he's just so fed up with the machinations of bureaucracies
and
government.
Well, yes, and I mean, that's a quite different thing. I mean, Mike, when he's working, and, you know, I've participated in a Nutters Club discussion with him, and you see his unique ability to one-on-one with particularly with kids at the grassroots. And I can understand Mike's frustration when he gets up and the sort of you're dealing with the bureaucracy who are looking at the statistics and wringing their hands and talking about suicide prevention plans. And it's all, I can understand him saying, well, that's all very well, but listen, we've got to do something on the ground about this.
Do you think that, you know, when you talk about the young people having people to guide them through this, people that they can respect and trust and relate to, do you think that we sometimes as adults minimise young people's concerns, fears and worries?
Oh, absolutely, because it's extraordinarily difficult. I mean, I don't know, well, I'm further away from it than you are, but, you know, trying to remember what it was like to be a teenager and all the kind of silly things you worried about, but in hindsight, you realise, well, they were just, you know, they weren't worth the grief. You know, that's just the reality of it, that it needs someone who can understand and relate to that and not just dismiss it as nonsense, but actually talk them through it. Now, a good psychologist or psychiatrist could do that, or a good counsellor, particularly in a school environment. But, you know, my impression is that the schools are not well supported in terms of having counselling services available as and when required.
Would that be one thing you would love to see?
Absolutely. Yeah. I spoke to a school counsellors' national association. I told them I thought they're doing a marvellous job. This is some years ago. I quickly realised that they felt just overwhelmed, partly because the importance of their role wasn't recognised or was seen as an add-on to something else. They didn't have the training. They were struggling. But they were, in many ways, in a unique position to actually understand what was going on and provide some support and guidance.
There was the extraordinary story that marked the start of this series that's being done about the teen suicides in Northland,
yes,
which was just heartbreaking. They did talk about the fact that you know, resources were just thrown at the schools and the young people and the organisations that were working with them. So the suicide rate came down in Northland. And then as soon as those resources went, bang, it went straight back up again.
Yeah, it's very much, and I've heard particularly senior Maori people say this to me, you know, they come from Wellington, and often that's an exaggeration, they didn't, but they come in, all guns blazing, often sort of not necessarily working in concert, there's a lot of attention and spotlight and effort, but then they go away again, and that's the problem, that, you know, it's a local problem, and this is what I picked up in my time as coroner, speaking to groups up and down the country, from St Vincent to Paul to counselling groups to bereaved groups. They're all saying, we want to know what's going on in our local community, our wee town, our wee village, and what can we do to help? What are the facts? What's really going on? Not what is the current suicide prevention plan for the next 5 years.
Can you see it changing in our lifetime? Our lifetime, yours and mine?
I think it is eminently doable. And again, you know, it's people like Mike King who for a long time would say, well, what about target zero? And he'd say, well, you know, you laugh. Give me a number. What should we be aiming at? Because we're not doing any good now. I believe it is, you know, there's no reason. It's strange that the suicide rate is such an almost a constant, and there's something about our society and then other societies that seems to have some natural tide, some natural sort of level that our culture kind of supports, and it hardly deviates. And I believe that it should be possible. You know, we've seen what's happened with things like what we used to call cot death by intensive investigation and help and investigation, support from others, things like huffing, you know, the butane sniffing, that sort of thing. If you actually get stuck in and face up to it, you can make a difference.
Well, here's hoping we can. I thank you very much for your time. That is Neil McLean, former Chief Coroner.